Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to Season 12 of the Parenting Aces podcast, a proud member of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and this week we have with us Wofford University men's tennis coach, Rod Ray. You guys are in for such a treat. If you haven't heard of Wofford, I want you to look it up right now. The link is in the show notes on parentingaces.com. Rod is an incredible coach, an incredible human being, and has an incredible story to share with all of us of his two sons and their journeys, not only in junior tennis, but also in track and field, and how they each found their way into competing at the collegiate level. Rod's younger son plays for him, actually, at Wofford, which I think is amazing as well, and he will share with us the challenges and how he met the challenges of being both coach and parent. So you guys are in for a real treat. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Coach Rod Ray of Wofford University.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Rod, it's so lovely to meet you. So wonderful to have you on the podcast. And I am really excited to chat with you and have you share your wisdom and experience with our audience. So welcome to Parenting Aces.
Well, thank you, Lisa. I've been a fan of your show I've watched it for years. So I'm delighted to be on the show with you.
Yeah, I'm blushing. I don't know if you can tell. So before we jump in, I really want you to kind of give our audience a little bit of your tennis story, how you got started in the sport and progressed to your current role as the head men's coach at Wofford in South Carolina.
Great. Well, I grew up predominantly in the Atlanta area and played junior tennis and a long time ago. And at that time I played multiple sports, but played junior tennis and high school tennis and played college tennis at East Tennessee State. After college, I went to work in junior development at a club outside of Columbia, South Carolina, and did that for about 10 years. And I'm getting ready to start my 24th season at Wofford College in South Carolina.
That's amazing. And along the way, got married and had two sons.
That's right. Yeah.
Both of whom are athletes, one of whom is a tennis player. So yes. I'd love for you to just give us a little of their story as well. Having two boys, sometimes it can be really tricky to help them find their own passions and not have younger brother just following on the heels of older brother. How did y'all manage that challenge?
Yeah, pretty crazy times. So my children are, one will graduate from college. My oldest son will graduate in college in December, and my youngest son will graduate from college in May. And they're 18 months apart. My youngest son, Ash, plays on our tennis team at Wofford. So he's a rising senior. And he grew up around college tennis. They both grew up around college tennis, but Ash played a lot of tennis and went through the whole junior tournament process. And so we had a lot of fun doing that, which makes me relevant to Parenting Aces because I've done that. And now he's on our team and
That's, and not just on your team, playing. He played number one for you last year.
He did. He played one for us last year, and played three his freshman year, most of the year three. I just picked him up from the airport 2 days ago from Tunisia, where he spent a month kind of trying to play futures tournaments and going through that and having a. It's an incredible experience in Africa. So he's having a great time, and he's a finance major at Wofford.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And your older son.
Yeah. And then my older son, Cole, goes to Gardner-Webb University, which is less than an hour from here in North Carolina. And he's on the cross country team and at Gardner-Webb, and he'll graduate in December. And he's an English major. Super cool kid. He and Cole, as we'll talk a little bit more about, is on the autism spectrum, which has been a really interesting journey for our family.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so cool that your boys have each found a passion through sports and a way to kind of navigate through their childhood and early adulthood using sports as the vehicle to do that.
Right. So, sports are great, right? And I mean that, you know, obviously as a coach, but I also work at an academic institution. And so, and I want to keep that part really important, that's what a college is really about, right? It's about, the academics that way. But we know sports are fantastic and they go hand in hand. Most of the world doesn't have college athletics like the United States has. Mm-hmm. But we have it because we believe that it's a really great part of that academic experience, right?
For sure. For sure. And I think, you know, being a college coach yourself and having a child come up through junior tennis, one of the things we were chatting about offline was because you are a college coach and have been through your boys' whole childhoods, you weren't the tennis parent. Your wife was the tennis parent.
Right, right. So, my wife works full time, and I work full time. Plus, I have a child with special needs, and so I think, you know, like in Ash is a good player who plays a lot and loves the sport, but it wasn't a given that he would do that. I think it was actually kind of difficult for him to do that.
Just because of your role in the sport,
yeah, or right, because I wasn't around, and my wife was had a full time job, and then we had another son who took a lot of time and energy.
Sure.
So you know, although I have a son who plays college tennis and played junior tennis, It was his decision. Obviously we supported him, and we like all tennis parents, we put a lot of resources towards junior tennis, spent a lot of money and a lot of time and energy on it. But it was fun to see that, because it wasn't just handed to him, that he really had to go after it on his own.
Yeah. And I want to dig into Cole's story more, but before we kind of shift gears there, I'm really interested to hear about Ash's decision to come play at Wofford and yeah. What was his recruiting experience like?
Right.
Were there other schools that he was considering?
Yeah. So Ash, Ash grew up around Wofford. I was one of Ash's coaches. He was lucky to have a lot of people pour into him as coaches. Ash was recruited by a lot of schools, and ultimately chose Wofford. But he had the opportunity to play at a lot of different schools. His junior year, he left Spartanburg, where we left our home, and went to live in an academy in Charleston, South Carolina, about 3 hours away. And I think that probably helped Ash to be able to choose to play kind of at his home school. Mm-hmm. He just had a great appreciation, not just for me, but for the school itself, and came back to that. Yeah.
We have a lot of people in our Parenting Aces community who wear both a coach hat and a parent hat. Okay. I would love to hear how you kept that in perspective. And, you know, when were you coach when you were working with Ash, and when were you parent?
Right. You know, I coached kids before I had kids. And when I coached kids, I said I would never coach my own children. I only want to be dad. And I don't want to coach my own kids. But then I think just out of time, out of money, I just ended up kind of coaching really both my kids. But gave them a lot of exposure to a lot of other coaches as well. But I think like with Ash, my tennis playing son, one of the things that helped us was that I did have a child with special needs. Mm. And so anything that Ash did was kind of a bonus. So it wasn't, you know, he sports came a lot easier to Ash than they did to Cole. And so Ash's life it's just been a little easier than Cole's life. And so it wasn't whatever Ash did was just like kind of like icing on the cake. It was kind of, so it wasn't a situation where I was ever pushing Ash. I had a lot of knowledge because I've been around high level tennis. So that piece was pretty easy, but usually it was Ash saying, actually not usually, 100% of the time it was Ash saying, "Dad, when can we train? When can we train?" And because of kind of a crazy life situation that I've been given, it was, well, we can train, but it can't be long, or I have to go. I want to spend time with you, but I don't have that much time in that capacity. And we did make a conscious effort when we were at home. We didn't talk about tennis, and we did that also out of respect to my son who didn't play tennis.
Right.
And that was we didn't, obviously we had the tennis champ. I mean, I study tennis. I'm an expert on tennis. I study it like crazy. But around my son who doesn't play tennis, I think I was probably self-conscious about not having it on. I think at the end of the day, that probably helped Ash. I didn't do it to help Ash, but it unintentionally helped Ash.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's always the challenge, right? Is where do you draw the line when you're coach and when you're dad? And, mm-hmm. you know, we always say, you know, don't talk tennis around the dinner table. Yep. And, right. you know, be respectful of your child's wishes on the drive home after a tournament. Right. And, yep. and those kinds of things. And it's very difficult. And I would think even more so for somebody who has the breadth of knowledge that you do and the years of experience that you do in the sport, to kind of take a step back, take off that coach hat, take off that tennis hat, and just be dad to yeah. both your boys right. in a more generic way than, you know, all tennis all the time.
So, yeah. And I think I've been doing it long enough where my perspective is pretty good in that, you know, why tennis, right? Why junior tennis? Why college tennis? We know that tennis is really good as a character development tool, as a time management tool, it's because it's difficult. It's a really good teaching mechanism when it's done right. It goes hand in hand with academics. It goes hand in hand with sportsmanship. It doesn't come before those things. It goes hand in hand with those things. I was telling a young player the other day that, you know, I think it's best to have a team sport and an individual sport, to have both, tennis being the individual sport, maybe something like basketball being the team sport. And those two go really well together. And then when you get to college, it's I get the best of both worlds, right? We get the individual and the team. But I think having that perspective, that tennis is a teaching tool. People say, well, why should my child play tennis? To be fun. It's fun, but it's also really difficult. So I'd say it's fun, but more importantly, it's a teaching tool, right?
Right. Well, and there's that, you know, statement, you either win or you learn, right? And most tennis players are not winning the majority of the time. They're, you know, there's only one winner at the end of the tournament. Everybody else is, it's a learning opportunity.
And it's so hard. Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough. It's really tough. Okay. I want to switch gears a little bit and I want to talk about Cole and I want to talk about how, as a family, you guys have found a way to manage Cole's needs and, you know, well, let me back up a minute. At what age did you realize Cole was on the autism spectrum and might need a little extra support?
So I think Cole was probably about 4 or 5 years old when he got diagnosed with autism.
How long did that take though? I mean, did y'all think something was off before that? And you were like trying to figure out what's going on here with our kid.
Well, one of the things that makes autism so hard is that it's tricky.
Yeah. Well, and there is that spectrum.
The saying is, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism.
Yeah.
It's all different. Okay. And just a range of challenges. So Cole was in school and a school said, you know, we really can't accommodate Cole. We don't have the resources. So we actually moved to a nearby town, for Cole's school. Our family moved, 40 miles away to Greenville, South Carolina, for a school that was well suited for Cole. And then things happened. We about ran out of money and moved back to Spartanburg. So Cole ended up going to about 9 different schools. Did go to 9 different schools, in his 12 years of school. So we left no stone unturned. And my wife and I, like athletes, kind of we went after it and just pursued anything we could to help him, while also trying to support our son, the tennis player. We spent a lot of time and energy trying to uncover and discover what would be best for Cole. And I think it helped. Mm-hmm. But the neat thing about that is now Cole's 23, and doing really well. And, you know, I have great friendships with younger men who have children with special needs, because it is hard. You know, I think, if you have a child with special needs, the divorce rate is about 70%.
Yeah.
So divorce rate's really high for coaches, really high for families with special needs. So I don't know how we did it, but it was difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I can only imagine. And how old was Cole when you realized that sports might be a great outlet for him to pursue to help him figure out who he was in the world and how he was going to function in the world and all those things.
Right. So at a young age, he did karate, he did swimming, he did triathlons. I mean, so autism is a neurological state. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we know that sports is really good for us neurologically. It's good for us physically, but it's really good for our brain. Right. You feel good when you exercise and you feel good physically, but you feel good chemically. Your brain feels good. You feel alive. So the more research we did, we learned, my wife Merritt and I learned that physical activity is good for everybody, but it's especially good for people with, you know, with a neurological challenge. Mm-hmm. Running became, you know, Cole was on the high school cross country team and that sort of thing. But physical activity was really important for his well-being. He did better in school when he was active, but you know what? Everybody does better in school when they're active, right?
That's right.
I do better in school when I'm active, right? My players do better. I mean, you know, my college tennis players, their GPA is higher than the average student here. And this is a really good academic school. And so we're at our best when we're active, right? When we're healthy and active. And that's, it's hard for people with special needs. But we helped Cole with that a lot.
Do you feel like the order inherent in training to be a college athlete was helpful for him too? That I don't know much about autism, but and I could be completely off base, so correct me if I am, but my understanding is that for some autistic people, that having that sense of order and knowing what's coming next is very important.
Yeah.
And being a high level athlete requires planning, scheduling, time management, as you mentioned.
Right. Some discipline, right? Mm-hmm. And to be part of a community like Cole had a wonderful high school coach, cross country coach. He's had a wonderful college coach but to be part of a team, you know, I bet Cole was, you know, there aren't a lot of people participating in Division I athletics on the autism spectrum. I don't have a number, but I hope that there'll be more in the future. You know, part of my mission is awareness, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I give Cole's cross country, high school cross country coach, you know, I would do anything for that man. He was really kind and inclusive.
Idea that Cole tried to run in college, or where did that come from?
Yeah, no. Cole wasn't a great high school athlete. He went from probably coming in last most of the meets to coming in average most of the meets. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't a highly recruited athlete. But as we were looking for colleges, we found a college that had a support center for people with special needs, as Gardner Webb did. And it was really asking the coach if Cole could be on the team. Mm-hmm. But you know, he's like, it's interesting. Wasn't long ago, the Greenville half marathon, Cole came in third in his age group. There were probably 1,000 people in the race, and Cole came in like 25th out of 1,000 people, which is really good for him. It's really good for anybody. You know, it's really good for anybody. And he knows it's really, I mean, so importantly, he knows that it's really good for anybody. So I've seen through, and you know, but I back up and I remember watching Cole or cheering for Cole when he came in last, like maybe 40 times, you know, mm-hmm. But he stuck with it. Was he good at it at a young age? No. Was he, does he think he's good at it now? Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
And so what that does for a person, right, is incredible, you know, and we see that in tennis. Like if you stick with tennis, you can become a good tennis player if you stick sure. with it. And a lot, you can become pretty good in most things, but you got to stick with it, right?
I've told the story numerous times on this podcast about when my son was in the 14s and he did not win a match for 9 months.
Wow.
Yeah. 9 months. And okay. Every day I just braced myself for, you know, to pick him up at practice and have him say, that's it, I'm done. You know, or every tournament, I would just brace myself for that announcement that, you know, how kids are, I suck at this. I don't want to do this anymore. It's too hard. And to his credit, he didn't do that. He stuck with it. And such that by the time he was in the 16s, he was beating those kids that he was losing to in the 14s. So it goes exactly to your point of, you know, and this is a great segue into the title of your book that you're working on, Hard Comes First, because I think to get good at anything, unless you're a prodigy, and, you know, those are the 0.0001%ers, right? We're not going to talk about them. We're going to talk about everybody else. You have to put the work in, and you are going to go through those periods where it's really hard and you're not winning and you're not seeing the results day to day that you're hoping for. But, you know, the long-term vision is that by putting in that daily work, eventually things are going to flip-flop and you're going to come out on the other side, a stronger player, a stronger person, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. I mean, what a wonderful lesson you just taught right there. And you know, to think like your son didn't win a match for 9 months. I mean, I can't wait to meet him, you know, and that's, I mean, but you know, he's gonna be able to use that time as a resource, in business, in life, and he's gonna have people he works with that struggle. He's gonna have, he may have a special need child one time. He may be blessed with that. He may, but to have gone through hard, in sport, you know, there is such a valuable tool. You know, we go through hard in other things that are more difficult than sport too. Right. But we know that life doesn't get easier. We get better at dealing with life.
Right? I love that.
It doesn't get easier. And so for my college students, that I love on, that I work hard at being patient on. I mean, when they're losing in tennis, it's difficult. This is what they've wanted to do for a long, long time. But I also know, you know, we're preparing you for life, right? And it's probably going to get harder than life's going to get harder after college than it is in college, right? Yeah. I know your son's living in another country right now. I mean, he's in a wonderful place, but it's probably lonely at times and it's hard at times, you know, but he's done hard before. Right. So he's, you know, we get more resilient by being tested. And, you know, that's what, so, you know, like, all of my college players have been through hard times. And that's one of the things that's motivated me to write this book, Hard Comes First, is that, you know, all of my former players are successful. All of them. And yet they've all been through hard times. And that's the message I want to share for people who have gone through hard times. You know, I've gone through hard times with my child, but I've gone through hard times in other things too. It's not just limited to that. But that's what makes life rich.
Right.
That's what makes life rich right there. You know,
what motivated you or compelled you to start putting these thoughts and experiences actually down on paper? Yeah. Maybe not down on paper, in your computer, to share with the rest of us, because there's a lot that has to happen for a book to actually get into a reader's hands, right? And the first thing that has to happen is you have to have the idea, but then you have to have the actual, whatever that is, to make you sit down and start capturing these ideas in a way that can be shared.
Right. So, I mean, autism was really hard at a young age for my wife and for myself and for Cole and for Ash. It was really hard. And And I, here again, I think because it was so hard, it helped my tennis playing son. My family situation helped my tennis playing son to be resilient, to be in a lot of things. But we were pouring so much into Cole. And part of that I learned, like, I wasn't gonna fix Cole. I wasn't gonna change him, I wasn't gonna fix him. And along the way, I learned that, wait a minute, really I was the one who needed to change. And it helped me to become a better human being, which in turn helped me to become a better coach. But going through that difficult and coming out on the other side, okay. I feel like I have a message to share that way, that change is good. Growth is good. I think I was scared of that. As a young parent, right?
Right. Well, I can only imagine getting that diagnosis and, you know, what's going through your mind of.
At least I didn't even know what it was, right?
Well, I didn't. Right. I mean, right. It wasn't something that was talked about 23 years ago or, right. You know, 20 years ago as much as it is now. But also just that realization that this fairy tale image that you have of what your family looks like is going to be different. And right. I love that you said that you realized you weren't going to fix him because he doesn't need fixing.
Right.
Right. It was, right. It was that you and the rest of your family needed to, as you said, change and grow to yep. learn how to be in this situation that was different from the fairy tale in your mind.
Yep. That's right. And so when your tennis playing child is struggling, you at the time it hurts, but you don't know if it's good or bad. Mm. Right.
Oh, it just feels terrible.
It feels terrible. But yeah. You know, we part of our story this year is we had a player on our team go into cardiac arrest.
Oh my gosh.
We were at Duke and he Mark, we were at Duke in October and he went into cardiac arrest and was resuscitated. No pulse, no heartbeat.
Terrifying.
To be honest, I thought he died. Mm-hmm. And so did everyone else there. He was at the right place at the right time. And he was resuscitated. But I spent 8 days with Mark in the Duke cardiac unit while his parents were trying to get to America and they ran into some problems in trying to do that. They had been in Iran earlier in the year, and so when they got to Paris, they couldn't get through with their visa to America because they'd been in Iran, and we had to jump through some hoops to get them to the U.S. But you know, I never will forget the doctor who came in to see Mark. He said, "Mark, you know, I can't tell you if you're ever going to play tennis again, but I can tell you that there's a reason you're alive. That most people, you shouldn't be here right now." What you've been through, there's less than 3% chance of surviving. And he said, I'm one of the best cardiologists in the world. And in my experience, people who've gone through what you've gone through have an incredible platform to present life from. And
what a gift he gave that young
man. Yeah. And so that doctor sat with Mark and I in the hospital room for 30, 40 minutes or so. And he got up and left. And I said, Mark, I'll be right back. And I ran down the hall. Excuse me, sir. That was the greatest coaching I've ever heard, you know? but that's when we go through struggle, we don't know if it's going to be good or bad at the time. Right. Mm-hmm. We think it's only going to be bad.
Right.
But we know that hard times shape us and sometimes are very valuable later. Right.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait for your book to come out. So you had told me you think the book will be out sometime in 2024. And so I just want the listeners to understand, we will let y'all know when it's available and we'll have Rod back on to talk about it more in detail.
Thank
at that
you.
Point.
At least I'd love for people to, I have a website. Mm-hmm. If anyone interested could go to, hardcomesfirst.com and sign up. They'll get the first chapter and kind of be on my blog list, which I love.
And we'll have a link in the show notes on parentingaces.com as well. So make it easy for you guys to just click and sign up there. I want to touch on one more thing before we close up our chat here, Rod. And that is something, again, that you and I were talking about offline. And it's a question that has been coming up so much. And it's around college recruiting and ratings and rankings. And my kind of platform, my mantra, my soapbox has been, you know, we've got to stop focusing so much on these ratings and rankings, that the good college coaches know to look beyond ratings and rankings. And if they're only focusing on ratings and rankings, you don't want your kid playing for that coach anyway. Right. Can you talk a little bit about, and let me just back up. The response to that is typically, but yeah, if they're not at a certain level, they can't even get a response from the coach, right? So we got to focus on it in some way, shape, or form. When you're going to these junior tournaments and looking at players to recruit to come play at Wofford, what are the things you're looking for?
So a rating or a ranking, that is a snapshot of what's happened in the past. And that's it, right? It doesn't tell us anything about what's happening in the future. Recruiting, I'm not unlike other college coaches. We spend a lot of time recruiting. I mean, we're looking for players, right? Mm-hmm. So, if I get word, well, there's a reason that somebody's such and such, I mean, that's fantastic, right? It's only about the past, right? I don't really care about the past, right? Your son struggled in the 14s or whatever. I mean, I wouldn't know that, right? As a college coach, I'm looking for, like, do they love tennis? You know, are they going to be a great teammate? Are they going to make our joint experience better? I mean, obviously we have to win. We want people who are going to be good players, but you know, if you're a mediocre player today, can you be a good player 2 years from now? Of course you can.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, 2 years. I mean, I coach men. So let's say a 17-year-old to a 19-year-old, is that person going to change? They're going to change a lot, right? I mean, they're going to change a lot. So, but they have to like tennis. I mean, I'm not going to recruit somebody who doesn't like tennis. I'm going to wish them well, but that's that's going to be a big piece of it. But I do see people at junior tennis tournaments that I go, well, they don't look like they want to play college tennis. Mm-hmm. And they might not, you know, right. It's not for everybody.
Right. But when you say you're not going to recruit somebody that doesn't love tennis, what is it that about loving tennis that makes you want that person on your team?
Yeah.
And what would it be about somebody that doesn't love the game that would make you shy away from them? I mean, how's it going to impact the experience of the team?
Oh God. Well, first of all, if you don't like something, you're probably not going to improve, right? If you like something, you're more likely to you're going to want to do it more. You're going to want to do it in the summertime. You're going to look forward to coming to practice. You're going to look like I think we probably hit our prime about 30 years old. Mm-hmm. We certainly don't hit our prime at 22.
Right.
Okay. So if I'm looking at somebody who's going to want their senior year to be their best year.
Yeah.
They don't want their sophomore year to be their best year. They want their senior year. So they really love it, you know, whether they're going to be a pro player or not. not the point. The point is they're going to go after this thing, mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, I was at an academy the other day, and I went to see some guys practice, and I came away going, yeah, that's, I found out what I needed to know. I already knew they were good players.
Yeah.
Right. But what I mean, UTR, it's fine. That's not what I want. I didn't go to learn about their UTR. I went to learn, like, are these, I wanted to see them at practice, not at a tournament. I wanted to see them at practice.
Interesting.
I wanted to see them at practice. I wanted to see them interact with their friends. I wanted to see them interact with their coaches. I wanted to watch them practice. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean,
you want to see the energy level.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The people that they check the box. Yes, I would like to be around these guys at practice, and I think they'd like to be around me. We don't get as many competitive opportunities as we get practice opportunities. Yes, mm-hmm. I want to see them perform for sure, but I might see them perform and they might choke. They might, oh my gosh, the coach was there. I had so much pressure on me. Or, well, that's normal. I'm not going to write them off because of that, right? Mm-hmm. They're not going to be the first person to get nervous and play a bad match. Everybody's done that, right? And that they might outgrow that and they can work through that, but that might impact their UTR.
Yeah.
But enthusiasm, right? Nothing great happens without enthusiasm. Ralph Waldo Emerson, nothing great happens without enthusiasm. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the players that I have on my current team, don't they want enthusiastic teammates?
Mm-hmm. So you're looking out not just for your experience as the coach, but also your existing players who have spent the last 3 years with you. I mean, it seems to me what you're saying is you feel a responsibility to continue to bring in people to keep their experience positive as well.
You know, Lisa, I have four freshmen coming in this year. I mean,
which is a lot.
It's a lot. I mean, it's going to be fun, right? I'm going to have I've got some returning players and I've got four freshmen coming in. So that's an unusually large freshman class, but I'm looking forward to that. And this is, you know, we're still in the time when people have a fifth year, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people aren't recruiting freshmen.
Right.
You know, we don't have grad school at Wofford. We specialize in 4-year experience, and that's all we have. So that's one reason I'm not recruiting grad students, because I don't have that option. Mm-hmm. But I'm also recruiting freshmen because I want freshmen. I want that relationship. I want that. I'm not just bringing in somebody who's only going to contribute on match day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. All right, parents, if you're watching this, listening to this, if you don't want your kid going to play for Coach Rod Ray at Wofford, I don't know what to say to you. I mean, you are such an amazing coach, an amazing human being, and I think, you know, your players are so lucky to have the opportunity to fall under your sphere of influence for the 4 years they're with you. And I'm just so grateful to you for reaching out and taking the time to come do this podcast with me and letting me learn about you as well. I feel like I have a new friend. So I'm just really excited to meet you and follow the Wofford journey this year, see how your freshmen fare over the next 9 months. And thank you so much for coming on.
Well, I've loved being with you. Thank you.
Thank you. To my listeners, thank you all so much for tuning in. We will catch you next time on Parenting Aces.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast. For tennis parents, by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.